This is my home group. Holy crap. I'm so like excited, and because I asked one of my best friends to speak for me, and I just got even more excited because I saw a girl that I got sober with, and she's back. I asked this girl to speak for me, and I'm sorry because I'm gonna get emotional like from the bat, because we were new together. We like got sober together, and we've had like good and bad together. Like we got through like wanting to drink. Well, I know I wanted to drink. I don't know if she wanted to drink. And like not doing the right thing and doing the right thing, and just kind of like all these years of like this craziness, and there's no other word for it. And there was a period, a couple of years for me where I was not good at all. And she was, like, she moved past, and she was, like, good and doing the right thing and being sponsored. And she was one of the only people that was, like, in my life, like, just showing, walking the walk. And she does that, like, all the time. She just walks the walk, and she doesn't do it with, like, flashes and stars and stuff. I don't know if that makes sense, but she just is such a great example of Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, there's a couple people that I look up to in this program besides my sponsor, and she's one of those people that, like, I know, like, no matter how much time goes by, like, I can always come to her and be, like, just good. And I don't know. I don't know if you guys understand, like, everything, but she's just an amazing woman, and I'm so excited that she's my friend, and I'm so excited she's speaking for me tonight. And Danielle, come up.
Hi, I'm Danielle. I'm an alcoholic.
Ooh, I'm actually taller.
Thanks, Tiffany, for asking me to speak. My sobriety date's January 2nd, 2007. I have a home group. It's Yana. This used to be my home group for a long time. I just can't ever make it on Thursdays because of work. And I have a sponsor, and I sponsor others, and they're here tonight too, so that's pretty cool. I didn't want to drink when that happened, actually. I thought about using heroin or killing myself. Because I always heard, like, it was pretty cool. You know, I always wanted a better story. Like, you hear all these things, like, oh, I was an IV drug user. And I'm like, oh, I didn't do that, you know? Like, damn, I should have did that, you know? And only an alcoholic, I think, would think like that. Like, I should have had a better story, you know? And that's how I was when I was in my first year of recovery. Like, I always wanted something else, you know? I never owned mine. And but the way it went, and I'll just say one thing too, with Tiffany, it's like when she asked me to speak, at first she caught me off guard, so I was like, why? Why? And I did the same thing to my husband when he asked me to marry him. I was like, oh my God, what is that? I felt so bad because he was probably like, oh my God, this was a bad idea, you know? But it really, like, about a month ago now that she asked me to speak for her, and it just brought back so many memories, you know, of, you know, us riding in the car to, like, different places, taking road trips to Atlanta, you know, while we were going to ICKYPA, you know, the International Conference to Young People in AA, and, like, you know, Dave Dominguez, like, on the cell phone, you know, texting as we're slowly going into the median of the interstate, for 8 hours, you know, and is he here tonight? Sorry. you know, and I'm just like, you know, it's just a lot of memories. Like, I was a manager of a halfway house for, like, a halfway house that never got started, so the roof caved in, something happened, I don't know. Anyway, never got started, but we would have slumber parties there because I was able to live there for a couple months afterwards, and we'd have slumber parties there, me and her and Katie. And, you know, like, we went through that really rough time at 2.5 years sober where we thought dancing was okay. And that was part of, you know, like what we wanted to do. No, we weren't going there for validation or vicarious pleasure. You know, we were just dancing. And obviously that did not work for me, you know, because here I was, you know, 2 months after doing that thinking like, oh, I should be cutting, you know, use heroin. Okay. And I had, and I got so depressed. And this was 2.5 years ago. I remember like yesterday, you know, my boyfriend and I broke up. So obviously that's what spewed the dancing fiasco. You know, so I'm like, I'm single, woo, you know. And here I am, like, at a club and lonely. It was, you know, a whole bunch of older folks. No offense, you know. And I was, saw this guy, he was bartending, and I knew him from when I was like 22, 23. The guy was bartending then, he's still bartending, I'm 30 years old, and he's 32, and I was just like, oh my God, you know, like, this is not where I want to be. I had 13 amends to make, you know, if I came back to the program, or, you know, I could go out and drink and do whatever I wanted to, you know. And so I came to that point, like, the turning point, you know. Like, and it was the same thing when I got sober the first time, you know. I mean, I never drank, but it was the same thing when I got here, you know, from the get-go. It was like that turning point, and I decided to make those 13 amends. And there was an amends that this girl lit me up for, like, 2 hours, you know. Just like, you know, Eddie was sharing about his mom. I was like, I can so relate because I came from a similar upbringing. And my mom was from Colombia, so we had, like, that Spanish household, and she was very strict. I couldn't even go to a football game, you know, until I was, like, out of high school. And, you know, I was never allowed to go to our football games. And, you know, couldn't spend the night at my friend's house. I was 16. And it was just a whole bunch of stuff, like, she didn't let me do, which today I'm really grateful for, you know. But she and my dad, like, I would only see my dad, like, you know, a couple times out of the week. And, you know, my dad was an alcoholic, so it was just, like, kind of better that way because when they would fight, it was just, like, a huge tumultuous, like, relationship. And but she ran the house, and she was really, you know, critical. And, you know, like, I always thought, oh, she's verbally abusive, you know, all this stuff. And, no, she's just, like, frank, and that's how they are, you know. She's, like, would pinch me, like, oh, you're getting, you know, fat. Are you pregnant? And I'm like, nope, just getting fat. Like, thanks, Mom. Love you. And I used to get so resentful at her, you know, growing up, because it was like I tried so hard. Like, you know, I always felt really insecure about myself, like a lot of us do, you know. I felt really insecure. And, yeah, I think kids just do. I don't think that's what made me an alcoholic. But, you know, I tried to do really good in school. You know, I had to, like, straight A's pretty much. I played all kinds of sports. I never even drank till I was 18 years old, you know. So, like, there was no kind of, besides the insecurity and feeling I was a little, you know, different and not in the loop with everybody else, you know, there was no telltale signs that I was going to turn out to go down this road, you know, and become an alcoholic. My first drunk was at 18. I just graduated high school, and we went to my grandparents' house or something. Like, they have this condo, and it was like a weekend thing, and my cousin was like a huge drug dealer, so we weren't really that close. But that night, the first time I drank, it was like a Zima, you know. You put the little Jolly Rancher, Zima, yeah. You put the Jolly Rancher in it, it becomes a flavor, and that was really exciting. And so I was like, apple, I love it. And and so the only thing I remember after having that Zima was that I only remember one. Apparently it was a lot more than that. And that's usually how it went. Like, oh, I only had two. No, you didn't. You know, you just blacked out after two. And I tried, you know, other substances. I smoked cigarettes, and I was wandering down St. Petersburg on the beach by myself at 18 years old, you know. And that was my first drunk. And another thing to point out about that experience was that, and this is what alcohol did for me, was that my cousin and his girlfriend, who later became like my running buddy for like 10 years, she kind of drank the way I did. And she was one of my amends too, and that I had to make at that time I was talking to you about earlier. But it came to the point where they were arguing, running around with knives, whatever. That's the usual. But at this point, like, I didn't care at all. Like, I felt like alcohol numbed me, and it numbed me against you. Like, I mean, I didn't care about you, me, my friends, you know. Like, I didn't care about them fighting. You know, my little sister was crying like she always did. Stop them, stop them. And I was just like, I don't care. I'm going to sleep. And, you know, that's what it did for me. It made me not care about anything. And I enjoyed that because I always felt like I cared too much. You know, I always wanted to be bad, but I never could. And I always felt like I had to be this good person and, like, I had too much of a conscience, you know. And so, but alcohol let me do things that I normally would not do, you know, without drinking. And so I liked that part. And, you know, and I went through the years drinking. And, you know, I used other substances first because it was just easier to get, you know, when you're 18. And I definitely hit a bottom after 6 months doing that. And but I didn't know about Alcoholics Anonymous and or, you know, any other program out there. But I definitely could have used it then. My father died when I was 18 also. So it was just a, like, slew of unfortunate events, you know. And I came to a breaking point. I wanted to kill myself, and I tried. And obviously not successful. I was like, oh, I can't even do that right, you know. Like, nothing I could do right. And so I just switched to drinking because, you know, I started dating an older guy, and he could buy me liquor. So I felt like my life was more manageable drinking than it was doing other substances where you lock yourself in your house for about 3 weeks and put black sheets on the windows because you don't want to see the light, and then you can't get to work, you know, and you don't have any money. So I thought it was a little bit, you know, more successful drinking on the weekends, partying at night, doing that whole weekend warrior thing. You're able to have a job for a little while and, you know, make money. Well, that eventually, like, doesn't turn out that way. At least for me, I was never a social drinker. I don't know what that is. I've always drank alcoholically from the get-go. Once I put one drink in my body, you know, that phenomenon of craving, you know, and I was off to the races. And one of the things, you know, you get a DUI, like, I mean, I did, and, you know, there was just several things. Like, I didn't have a lot of physical consequences, you know, or trouble with the law besides that DUI, but I just had a lot of emotional consequences. Like, I hated myself. I hated who I became. You know, I developed an eating disorder, you know. It was just all part of, like, you know, what I did. And so I was a hot mess when I got here. And one of the stories that I'll tell of my that sums up my drinking in one event, you know, and I'm sure a lot of you have heard this story, but you know, I ended up getting cancer, you know, at 21 years old, and that was obviously God's fault, right? And so I blame God for that too, along with my dad's death and yada yada, everything else. You know, I had a list. And when I got here. And so anyway, I had cancer, lost all my hair, got breast cancer, went through chemotherapy. And, you know, I had this boyfriend who we were together for about 4 years at this point. And I'm still drinking, you know, every night, you know, nothing new. I'm going through chemotherapy every couple weeks and have on a wig. It's all pretty. And you know, it's just like that's the insanity of alcoholism, number one, is just like you're drinking every night on chemotherapy, you know, knowing that there could be a problem with that and thinking, you know, well, maybe I should ask my doctors about this. And I'm like, no. And because, you know, the reality is, like, I could not bear the fact for them to tell me no. Like, no, you cannot drink. That would have been the death of me, you know. So I kept on drinking. And, you know, this night, it was like 3 a.m., you know, perfect time to fight with your boyfriend. And he's bringing me home from some bar, probably because I had to leave. You know, it's time to close anyways. And he probably made me leave like 15 minutes early, and I got pissed, you know. And we're fighting in the car, and we're driving through West Chase. We're going like 40 miles an hour. And I was just like, you know, I hate you. Like, stop the car. I'm getting out, you know. And he's just like, no, that's ridiculous. We're, you know, I'm not going to drop you off in the middle of nowhere. You know, like, that's, you know. And I had this image in my mind that I would just be able to jump out of the car and then just, like, run away into the woods away from him, you know. And it doesn't really happen that way. Like, when you jump out of a car, you kind of, like, smack the ground really hard. And mind you, I have cancer, and, like, I have a wig on, so my wig goes whoosh, you know, like, off. And it's like, you know, going, you know, how I'm going, like as a tumbleweed, you know, boop, 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 you know. And, you know, so my wig shoots off like 100 yards away from me, whatever. And, you know, my boyfriend ran over my shoe, so he thought he ran me over. So he's, like, all freaked out, you know. And then I get up after, like, coming to, and I'm like, holy crap, you know. And I have road rash from my top of my shoulders all the way down to my butt. Like, my whole back was missing. And I'm bleeding everywhere. I had two huge lumps on my head, you know. And I'm, like, thinking, oh, great, my skull caved in. Like, this is a really shitty way to die. And, but my first thought was, like, my first thought when I got up was, like, oh, my gosh, someone's going to see me without my wig. And so I'm running over to get my wig, and it's a tumbleweed, you know. And so I'm trying to put it on, but it's not fitting over the lumps, you know. And then my boyfriend's rushing to me, and he's like, oh, my God, you know. And I'm just like, oh, stop right there. Like, I'm still pissed, you know. I don't care what just happened. Like, get away from me and take me to the hospital, goddammit, you know. And so that's my drinking, and that's what happens when Danielle drinks, you know. All in one story. And, you know, like, it's a funny story, like, thinking about it now until, like, and I did tell that to somebody at work once. And that was, whoa, they did not think it was as funny as I did. You know, they were just like, oh, my God. Like, don't ever drink again. And I was like, I won't, you know. And then the other few weeks ago, I met a girl, and she was my age when I did that. And, you know, it was in the hospital, and she had a traumatic brain injury and couldn't walk. And she did the same thing I did that night. She jumped out of a car. And then it made it real, you know, like, that's the reality. Like, I'm here only by God's grace. And sorry to go Debbie Downer, you know, but, you know, and, like, it just, you know, it, like, the only reason I'm here is because God, for some reason, wanted me to be here, you know, to share my message. Like, there's nothing special, you know, I mean, like, yes, there's something special about me, but there's nothing, like, you know, I'm just a one in a million, thousand, million, trillion people, you know, and I can, maybe if I can help one person in my lifetime, you know, like, that's really, like, I think all that my higher power wants me to be. You know, and I was really angry when I got sober, because obviously I'm sober, like, nobody else in the world's getting sober at 25. You know, and, like, little did I know, there was, like, little 17-year-olds running around, 14-year-olds when I got here. And you know, it's pretty amazing to see so many young people in recovery, you know, getting sober and doing the deal in this home group. And this is where I first found that there was young people doing, you know, in AA, you know. Like, I thought I was going to be playing solitary with old people for the rest of my life. And I was, like, really okay with that, you know. Like, that's fine, whatever. I like solitary, you know. And, but I thought, because I went to Brandon, like, I went to this little dirty meeting in Brandon. And it was called Our Club, if you know where it is, like, you understand. Because everybody smoked cigarettes, and, like, you know, I was just a little thing coming in, you know, the only girl, like, under 40, and I was just, but you could smoke cigarettes in there, and I was like, oh, this is awesome, like, I love this place, you know. And this was in 2006 in July, and, you know, what happened was, like, I sat in that meeting for about 30 days, didn't get any phone numbers, didn't really know, like, really what to do. Like, I was trying to go to church because, like, I thought I was a bad person, you know. Like, I thought, like, I didn't know what an alcoholic really was, you know. Like, I knew I could never drank normal, but I didn't think, like, I didn't know the extent of it, you know. Like, I didn't know that, like, I had an allergy to alcohol, and that's why I did the things. Like, the simplest thing, like, drinking causes you problems. Like, I didn't put that together. Like, I mean, I don't know why I never did, but I never put that together. And so I tried to get, I even got baptized at, like, 24 years old, thinking, like, that's going to solve my problem. That's going to make me a good person, and I'm going to stop doing these things, you know. And, you know, like, I can't, like, they told me I, you know, couldn't drink anymore. I couldn't go to clubs. Like, I couldn't have sex before marriage. And I was like, holy shit, I'm out of here, you know, like. And, like, I didn't get it because there was no way, like, not even the whole marriage thing, but, like, you know, like, to not drink, that was, like, totally out of the question, you know. But I did the whole, like, my aunt was in the program for about 2 years, so she kept leaving little hints, like, oh, here's a big book, you ever want to read it, you know. And I just used it as a coaster, never read it, I'd be by my bed, you know. But I did go to meetings for 30 days, and because I didn't get a sponsor or a home group or work the steps or call other women, I drank, you know. When something, you know, it was my father's anniversary of his death, And, you know, like, I couldn't cope. You know, I had nobody to call. And I was staying there with a bottle of vodka on his grave drinking while it rained on me. You know, it was just, like, one of those memorable events, you know, because I couldn't deal. And, you know, and I was off to the races again for another 6 months until it came to the point where, you know, I lost my job. You know, like, my eating disorder was out of control. Like, you know, I got, you know, abused by several people, like, and, you know, I was drinking every single day. I became a daily drinker. You know, I drank from the moment I woke up, because if not, I was nauseous, throwing up, and shaking. And that was, like, you know, that was my life. And, you know, I detoxed. What happened was that it was New Year's Eve. This was the last night I drank. New Year's Eve, I had that pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization from the night before, because I made a mess at some guy's bar who I was dating. And he, like, kicked me out and told me to get honest with myself about my drinking. And I was just like, whoa, like, you're a bartender. Like, what are you talking about? And, you know, I did the walk of shame down Waters, you know, got a ride from Chico, and he dropped me off at 7-Eleven. And then I ran into some other people at work, you know, and I was just like, that I used to work with. So then they took me back to my house because I had no car. And I thought I left my car at my mom's house, which I was living with my mom again, you know. Yeah, and I was really excited about that. And then I realized that I left my car at the bar. So I was just trapped at my mom's house. So I was like, I hate my life. And I looked in the mirror at my mother's house, and, you know, my eyes were completely black, and I felt like I had no soul. And I felt like, you know, I hated myself. I hated what I'd become. All I wanted to do was, you know, be able to stand myself for about 15 minutes. And, you know, I couldn't even do that. Like, I always wanted to read books or, like, you know, go watch a movie with my normal friends, you know, and I was never able to do things like that. You know, I would always cancel because I knew I wouldn't be able to not drink that night. And, you know, I got on my knees and I, you know, yelled out to God to help me. And I felt like I was going crazy because the committee was just going and going and going and it was not stopping. And I asked him for 1 second of peace. And I didn't want, you know, a week or a day or an hour. I wanted 1 second to just for my mind to stop. And, you know, 5 minutes later, my girlfriend calls me and she's like, where are we going for New Year's Eve? And I was like, you know, just like that. I forgot, you know, of the, you know, whatever the night before, and in the sadness and despair that I had. But so we were off to the races again that night. But what had been different that night was that I couldn't get drunk for the life of me. Like, I drank so much that night, more than I really have drank in a long time. And we were doing shot after shot after shot, and it was a moment of clarity. And I lived my life through her. Like, I saw everybody looking at her. And she was stumbling, making a fool out of herself, kissing all these other guys, and, you know, like, exposing herself. And, like, people's reactions to her and how she was, they were just like, wow, what trash, you know. And I was like, for the first time, I was like, wow, that's me, you know. Like, that's how they look at me, too. Like, I haven't graduated from college, you know. I have no family. Like, people barely talk to me. I have no friends, really, but her. And, you know, like, all my friends, you know, in high school, they're moving on with their lives, and, you know, they're becoming people in communities, you know, like, and I have nothing, like, nothing to show for. I never gained anything. And so it just came to the point where I started to realize that, and the next day, my parents did this intervention, you know, like, oh, by the way, you know, you're going to treatment. And they later told me I didn't agree, they were going to Baker Act me anyway. So I'm really glad I voluntarily said, yeah, I'll go, you know, because it was a really good time since I just quit my job. And they were going to fire me, so I like to quit before they fire me. And so I always had that, oh, here's my resignation if we were having a meeting. And so anyway, I go to treatment, you know, and I, you know, they made us go to meetings. Like, I started going to meetings and working the steps, you know. Morgan was my sponsor for a few years. Or is she okay? And thank God for her, because, like, I would totally be drunk today, you know. Like, I'd call her at 4 a.m, being like, oh, I got in a fight with my boyfriend again, you know. Like, she's like, well, I told you not to get in an early sobriety relationship, you know, like, my fault. And, you know, like, you pick the sickest. I was one of the sicker people, I'm sure, because I picked the sickest one in the bunch, you know. No offense. And that's just the way it was. And I was definitely really sick myself. So two sick people together is just like catastrophe. And it was for about 2.5 years. And but you know what? Like, I think about that, and even though it was like a freaking catastrophe, it was like I don't know if I would have been that active, you know, if it wasn't for somebody in a relationship being that active. You know, like, that person was really active in recovery, and that forced me to be really active, you know. And I'd be like, oh, I'm going to kill myself. And he's like, all right, well, I'm going to a meeting. And then I'd be like, God damn him, he just doesn't care. And so it's just, you know, that's what I learned. And I mean, I learned a lot in recovery. Like, I got to graduate college in recovery, you know. Like, I always wanted to work in the medical field, and I started going to get my nursing degree. So I became a nurse, and I got to become an oncology nurse and give chemotherapy to cancer patients. Like, how cool is that, to like be able to not only share my experience here with you, like as an alcoholic, but I can share my experience having cancer, even though I didn't do it the right way. You know, I know the feelings and the fears that they had, because I felt those too. I just drank mine away, you know. And but I get to share my experience with them and be a part of their life and be a part of their experience, you know. And you know, that's how God works for me. It's like always full circle, and He's like created this masterpiece out of the little broken, shattered glass that I gave Him, you know. And He created a masterpiece out of my life. And you know, I got to marry somebody in recovery, you know, who does the deal. And like, you know how Tiffany was saying, I do it, like, He does it better than me. Like, He will always pick up His phone. I'm always like, you know, but He'll pick it up, like, without, you know, hesitation. Like, He definitely walks the walk, and it's really awesome to be able to, like, share that journey with somebody, you know. And just, like, all the girls, you know, I've met in here, like, all my friends, like, I mean, they've just become a huge part of my life, and I wouldn't be sober without them. Like, each person in here, like, has influenced my life in such a special way, you know. And, you know, I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for them. Like, Annie let me in her house one day. I was going crazy at, like, 6 months sober wanting to drink. She doesn't even remember that, you know. But, I mean, she let me in, and I was able at least to talk to her for a few hours to calm my head, you know, so I wouldn't go drink. And really, ever since I walked in the foot of, you know, these rooms, like, the obsession was removed the first day. You know, it was just always me that was fighting it. You know, I've never really wanted to drink again. I really just wanted, except for the heroin instance, you know, I've never wanted to, because I know it doesn't work, alcohol, you know. And but I've never wanted to drink again. God did remove that from me, you know. I mean, I've definitely gone crazy. I've definitely relapsed in my eating disorder. I've definitely had to make a lot of amends. I mean, I've cussed Terry out on a number of occasions, you know, via text message, beep, 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 you know. And like, and we're really great friends today. Go figure. And, you know, it's just like, because I was like, I know they have to forgive me here. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. But it's just like a lot of memories. Like, I haven't done things. I've done about like half of everything wrong, you know, in here. Like, oh, baby. But I've done a lot of things wrong here, like so many things. Like, I did the whole, like, I mean, Tiffany was my huge co-signer of my bullshit, too, you know. Like, I remember, like, being out of a relationship at that 2.5 year, 3 year mark of sobriety, and I was like, I've been out of a relationship for 3 weeks now, you know, and that's a long time in alcoholic years, so that's like a lifetime. And I'm like, and Justin started, you know, we started hanging, because he was good friends with her boyfriend at the time, and he was coming around, and I was like, I should probably date him, he's single, and she's like, yeah, totally. And, and, you know, like, he ended up becoming my husband. I mean, go figure. And, but see, so it wasn't all bad, you know. And, but I've had a lot of really good times here, and I've had a lot of really trying times, and, you know, people in here kept me sober. You know, like, there's always, you know, somebody that God sends to me, you know, in my time of need. And, you know, it's always usually been someone in these rooms. And, you know, my mom and I have a really awesome relationship today. I thought, like, from the get-go, I would never, ever have a relationship. I didn't even take her wedding dress shopping because I knew that was going to go bad. I just talked, you know, showed her, like, these are the three options, which one you like better, you know. And today she's like a really good friend. Like we always, she calls me every day. I'm actually happy to talk to her, you know, like she makes me laugh the whole, like, I mean, the way she goes off on a tangent, I can laugh about today, you know, like I don't like, you know, get upset and angry anymore like I used to. There's no resentment there, you know, and like the relationship I have with my higher power today, like I, you know, I was really angry at God. And meeting's over. And just kidding. I was really angry at God, you know. Sorry, they did it to me too. And I was really angry at God, you know. And you know, today that's changed. Like, you know, Morgan told me to just like pray every day that you're not so angry, and like just say, hey God, like help me not hate you so much. And you know, I mean, that's how I interpret it. It's probably not what she said. But anyway, I prayed that prayer for 2 weeks, and I woke up one day, and, like, I didn't have that 25-year resentment of God anymore, you know. And that's one of my first experience with a spiritual experience, and that helped me build my relationship upon God. And it's, like, completely different today. You know, I don't try to put my God or higher power in a box, you know, and I always pray every day. Like, I've gotten back into the habit of doing that. Like, I was really horrible at it at first. You know, I thought if, it's kind of like says it in the 12 and 12, like fourth and fifth step. But it says, like, you kind of think, like, as long as you're doing good and being a good person, like, maybe that's enough. And it isn't, you know. Like, well, not for me. It wasn't enough for me. And I went through that in, like, years 4 and 5. Like, as long as I'm being a good person, you know, that's enough. And, you know, and I got to that lonely, pitiful place again, and I had to do my steps all over again and realize that I'm an alcoholic, and first and foremost, I got to remember that. I need to make more meetings. I need to pray every day, and I need to sponsor people and pick up that phone, you know, even when I don't want to, when it's not convenient, you know, and, like, I try to be that person. I'm not perfect still, but at least I can aim to be better. And, you know, like, the only other thing is really, like, you know, to try to stay grateful today. Like, I just, you know, that's, I mean, I'm really grateful to be sober. Like, God's given me every single thing I have in my life. And if I drink today, like, I know drinking is to die. And I used to joke about that. Like, oh, Morgan, I want to drink and die, you know. But, like, I really know, like, drinking is not maybe to physically die, but it'll definitely kill my spirit, you know. And it'll definitely make me not the person I am today. And I just want to thank Tiffany for asking me to speak. It's been a pleasure getting sober with you. I think you're the wonderful woman that you think I am. And, you know, I see you walk the walk, too. And it's really awesome to be able to walk the walk with all of you. So thanks. Bye.